Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of Far From Vesuvius podcast. My name is Ken, and today we are going to be going through the last three Napoli matches, as well as looking forward to this weekend's match against Cagliari. We're going to look at our wins against Atalanta and Frosinone, and of course, this week's match against Liverpool, which I'm sure we'll talk about in depth. So joining me today is the full allotment of Far From Vesuvius co-hosts, Rafa Rispo. Rafa, how's it going?
All things considered, it's going good. Trying to keep positive after the inevitable letdown from this past week, but it's Christmas time, and you know what, you know, we're busy at work and the family's ready for the holidays, so that's what's most important. And it's not as gloom and doom as we were feeling a couple days ago. So, you know, doing okay.
That's good to hear. Marco, how's it going, man?
It's going, you know. I think I finally recovered from Tuesday's disappointment. And as Rafa mentioned, as frustrated as we are, there is a bright spot. And we'll talk about that. And you know what? It's the holidays. So I think we all got to remember that as well.
Absolutely. Kirsten, how are you?
I think that I'm the least optimistic person on this podcast, but worry not. I've got a Slayer Winter Ale, and it is 7.2%. So by the time we actually get to discussions, I should be okay.
Nice. Well, yeah, you know, we'll start it off with some positives first. Going back to a couple of matches here because we haven't covered them. So a couple of weeks ago now, we played Atalanta on the road. We go there. We end up getting a 2-1 victory. We opened the scoring early on with Fabian getting a goal very, very early on, second minute, I think, or third minute, super early. And then in the 56th minute, Duvan Zapata, of course. I feel like it's always one of our former players that gets us. We play Samp and Quags gets a worldie, and we play Atalanta and Duvan just basically muscles himself a goal to tie it at 1-1. And then super late on in the match, Arkadiusz Milik gets a game winner. So I'll try not to spend too much time on the last two Serie A games, but takeaways on Atalanta-Napoli. Kirsten?
You know, it's hard to remember after Tuesday. I mean, I remember being relieved because I was worried about this game coming up just before the Liverpool match. And it was a weird day, right? Yeah, it was a Monday. Monday match. They never stick.
Yeah, it was a Monday match.
They never stick in my head quite as well. I remember liking what Fabian Ruiz was doing. And I remember thinking that Insigne had a pretty good game. But beyond that, I probably should have studied more. I kind of forgot that we were going over this one.
You know, it's an early goal from Fabian, so Insigne gets a, you know, beautiful assist and Fabian slots it away, and I think that's the early on goal that everybody remembers from that match. Rafa, your thoughts on Atalanta Napoli?
Well, I watched it on replay on ESPN Plus. And my girlfriend knew the result the whole afternoon, so she was trying to avoid like eye contact with her because, you know, it's like my dad when I used to come home and the match was being recorded, I'd have to like storm past him and be like, "Don't look at me, don't look at me, don't talk to me, don't talk to me," because he'd give it up and then I'd sit there and watching it, he'd just come out with a smirk and I'd be like, "Dude, get away from me." So, you know, she had to hide it from me all afternoon, but enjoyed the first goal, but inevitably knew that Duvan was going to put it in, or someone was going to put it in, because they came out firing in the second half, and was actually really relieved that Milik came on. And somehow I had the feeling he would slot it home when he came on, 10 minutes left. Not too long after he came on, he puts it in for the win, and relieved was how I felt after the match, because away to Atalanta is always going to be tough, no matter what they're going through in the league. You know, they're a very tough team, and I was just relieved to keep that, you know, that distance from Inter and from you know ahead of Inter and behind Juve.
Yeah, I mean, and Milik's goal is a great one too. I mean, the cross comes in from Rui, and he just sort of controls it onto his left and just smashes one past the goalkeeper.
Yeah, amazing goal. Very nice.
Marco, thoughts on Atalanta-Napoli?
Yeah, it was an important victory, and it never is easy to go over there. And Bergamo is a difficult place to play, and there was a whole lot of talk about whether the game would even take place, and Napoli potentially walking off the field because of, you know, the anti-territorial chants or the territorial discrimination chants, whatever you want to call it. And fortunately, that wasn't the case. And fortunately, from what I've gathered, there wasn't any racism from the fans, so that's nice to hear. But again, you don't really know what really happened in the stands. But the match did take place, and you know, although Fabian Ruiz did score right off the bat, I thought his finishing was actually pretty disappointing for the most part in that game, because he had a couple of opportunities. But and Duvan Zapata scoring, I still love Duvan Zapata, and you know what?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it was the case of the ex scoring against us, but at the same time, compared to what he did to Udinese last week, it was nothing to what he did to us. And you know what? It was nice to see Milik come on and make an impact and get a goal, because it was really, really important that he did, because we were all doubting him, and we still are doubting him, even though right now he does have the best goal per minute ratio, anybody above one goal, because Matri, I know, has a better goal per minute ratio in Serie A, but he's got one goal, right? So, and you know what? Hats off to the team for getting it done, because it wasn't the most brilliant performance at times, and especially after going up 1-0 right off the bat, and you don't find a second immediately, you can get complacent. And I thought Napoli did at times, and you know what, they did concede. They were just fortunate that they didn't concede late enough that they didn't have an opportunity to respond, and they did, and it was an important 3 points for this team going forward.
Yeah, I mean, in the grand scheme of everything, it's a pretty it's a pretty good result. And then, you know, Napoli get a week to prepare for last weekend's match. They played on Saturday morning here in America. They played Frosinone. And, you know, this was one of those matches where you're thinking maybe a lot of rotation. Last time we did this at home, it was against Chievo, and we got a 0-0 draw, and Ancelotti's turning everybody over. And are we going to see a similar performance? And we absolutely did not. We blast Frosinone 4-0. I mean, we get goals from a lot of, you know, what you would call, you know, fringe players or rotational players. Zielinski scores super early on, you know, inside 10 minutes. Unas scores a rocket, you know, maybe like goal of the week candidate probably. And then Milik gets a brace, and Ghulam gets two assists in his return. You know, this was sort of the happy-go-lucky match before Tuesday's disappointment, right? Alex Medet makes his Napoli debut. He gets a clean sheet. Not that he was tested, but he gets a clean sheet anyway. Ghulam comes back, gets his first start of the year, gets two assists. Adam Unas gets a chance and makes some big plays. Milik gets a brace, and then, you know, you win 4-0. Juventus beats Inter on the weekend, so we don't gain on them, but we do pull away a little bit from Inter in the standings. And going into Tuesday, I think everybody was feeling pretty confident. You know, this was a great match, and Marco, I'll start with you. You know, Frosinone at home, we really make a statement and get ready for Tuesday, what we all thought, I think.
Yeah, you know what, especially after Liverpool won 4-0, it was kind of nice to respond. I remember, I think I tweeted out from one of my accounts that, you know, whatever you can do, we can do better. And we'll get into Tuesday's game, but I think it was important to send a message, and it was also really, really important that the players coming back, whether, you know, making their debut, like you mentioned, in Merritt and, you know, even Eunice, or the players returning from injuries, like we saw from Ghulam, what they were able to do. And you know what, for me, the whole talk of that game is Ghulam, because...
Yeah, we're a different team when he plays.
You know, like, it completely... You know, this guy was out for over a year, and he came back, and it's like he didn't miss a beat. And I know it's only Frosinone, but at the same time, you see what the team and how the team looks for him on the pitch, and the 1-2s, and how they try to go down his flank, and the difference that he makes. And he provided 2 assists for Milik, and then even when Yunus came in, the connection they had with, you know, never even playing a competitive game together, and then setting up that fourth Milik goal, the second Milik goal, the fourth goal of the game, was just incredible. So I don't think you could say enough. And it was one of those games that I know it was 4-0. I actually went back to watch the highlights multiple times, and my wife actually chirped me. She's like, "What are you watching this again for?" But I was just so excited, you know, especially ahead of that Liverpool game, and we'll talk about it. I know we have to, but from Saturday's perspective, anyways, you couldn't have asked for a better match.
Yeah, and I think you know, I really do think that. I mean, Yunus got off to the best possible start. You know, he makes a little cameo appearance. He comes on, you know, at the end of a match, and he plays well. You know, he's a nice, you know, little addition to that attacking option. And I thought he played really well. And I thought, like you said, Marco, him and Ghulam got off to a very, very good little start together. And he played well. I think he sort of holds play up and is able to sort of set Ghulam up to set up that last goal, which is great. So it was a nice little cameo appearance for him. And I think after his debacle last season, he said all the right things and put his head down, and he had to fight through an injury. But I think you know, Yunus is ready to contribute to this team on some level. So, Rafa, I'll toss it up to you. Frosinone, what'd you think?
I loved Frosinone. that was a good one. You know, getting somewhat early lead. Unas's wonder goal, you know, that was good to see. It's funny because I kind of felt he'd get a goal, you know, and I think to myself, almost every time he starts, he does something great, and I was kind of calling for him to come on. And you know, like Marco said, we'll get to it in a minute. But I would have liked to see him on Tuesday. Milik's brace, almost a hat trick, would have been nice too. Yunus coming in, you know, all the stuff that happened with him during the off season, and you know. Him making a pretty much a complete turnaround and seeing some really good things out of him too when he came on, you know, it was nice to see it. You know, it was a much needed win, because of the fact that Juve won. You know, I still hold on to this somewhat fantasy that we can make it a tighter race towards the end of the season. You know, 8 points back in December is not the end of the world. It's not, you know, I mean, based on, you know, Juve's, you know, run of play and the way they're going, that they probably won't drop any more points, but, you know, it's still not, and to break further away from Inter too was really good. So I was very pleased with Frosinone, and I was very optimistic going into Tuesday because he, you know, Ancelotti made all the, you know, 7 changes from the previous, you know, the Atalanta and the Red Star match, because that was basically the same lineup. You know, to see Merritt come in and you know, get a clean sheet, even though he wasn't really tested. I mean, there was that one instance where he had to like fall back into the net and keep the ball out, but keep the ball in play.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, there was one. Yeah, there was one little moment where, you know, it was like a lob ball from like 40 yards out, and he held the ball over the line. But the whole time you're like, no. Yeah, and then him and Luperto also had a little misconnection at some point,
right? And I was like, it was good to see Luperto in too. And you know, until you mentioned it, I really forgot about Luperto started. You know, Ghulam, Luperto, and Merritt, and then Yunus coming in. You know, it was nice to see these guys returning from long term injury and being able to make a statement, even though it was Frosinone, and we won 4-0 last time we played them too. That last game of the season where you know who got that record. My dad was actually at that game, so he was pretty happy when it happened. But then, you know, we all know what happened after that. Oh, where you were? You? Yeah. I don't think I
even crazy felt rain, it. I was right? Just so excited.
Yeah, my dad actually said the same. He goes, nobody really cares. No.
Amazing. But
yeah. So I was happy.
Kirsten, I've been having
technical difficulties all through when Rafa was talking, so I'm not sure what he said. has anybody brought up the fact, though, that it's really frustrating to have Adam Unas and Amin Yunus on the same team?
No. It's a little name game we're playing now with Unas and Yunus.
They don't even have dissimilar first names. That would be helpful. Yeah,
they're both A's, and at least they don't look exactly the same. That would be really confused.
I did not watch this game live because I just got back to the States and it was far too early to be getting up at that time. I caught some highlights, but like I said, I don't know what's already been mentioned. I just want to reiterate how happy I am that Ghulam came back. That was like, when the highlights first started, even before any goals were scored, I was already delighting over that fact.
I think we all smiled a little when the team sheet came out and we saw him on that weird, like, equilibrium blocked lineup card that Napoli show on their social media, which I don't understand. Like, it's never in the lineup of the team is actually in. It's just like,
I think they do it to keep us wondering.
It's odd. Yeah, I think someone on Twitter said, "Oh, the classic Napoli 4-4-4," because it's like it's got all of the players and then Ancelotti. It's just a weird.
Hey, it's better than Villa used to do it alphabetically, I believe. So it was, or by number or something. It was like, what the?
Team, stop doing that. You're just confusing people, especially now because no one wears like the proper numbers. So he's not even doing it like 1, 2, 3 through 11. It's like, it's not good. Just put it in the formation. It's the way everybody knows it now. You know, Napoli, I'll gladly take over your social media.
So I've been saying that for like 2 years, ever since I started that English account. The English account that's like 3 minutes behind what the actual game is doing.
Well, it's gotten much better. God, it used to be so bad. It would be like, 20 minutes later, you'd be like, 20 minutes after a goal, it'd be like, Napoli goal! You'd be like, wait, did we scored again, or did we just, we're just behind? It's gotten way better. I'd say they've probably hired someone from the
outside. But not somebody good enough, I feel. Almost. Sorry if you're listening, Napoli social media person, but you gotta up your game.
Well, hopefully you are. Please get in contact with us. We'd be happy to have you on the show. But... you know, all of that, we win 4-0 at home after Liverpool win 4-0 in their game of the Premier League. Sets us up for Tuesday, right? We have all the scenario generators out. We've got, you know, Red Star home against PSG, thinking maybe if we mess up, they can throw us a favor, which Kirsten predicted they wouldn't, and they didn't.
Sorry.
We go in, you know, we're going to throw all the blame around today. No one is safe, so... But Napoli come out, I think this is about as nervous as I had been. And I was at work and I had the game on at work. And I had to try to work through it. And it was very difficult for me because I was pretty much had my eyes glued on the game. But, you know, Napoli come out pretty – I wouldn't say that Napoli parked the bus, but they didn't quite play to, you know, that offensive, you know, holding the ball style play that we're normal, that we're used to. Liverpool pressed the hell out of us super high too, so we were penned in, and they overran us in the midfield for the first 20 to 25 minutes and probably most of the game. And I think when the goal comes from Salah in the 33rd minute, it had pretty much been coming, but just the way it happens just makes it worse, right? I mean, Mario Rui and him kind of tangle up and he falls flat on his face and makes himself a meme. And then, you know, he scoots past Koulibaly and I think Ospina probably could have done better on this, but he doesn't, and it goes through his legs, and Liverpool are up 1-0. I guess the one big thing that I've passed by here that I guess I probably shouldn't is early on in the match, Virgil van Dijk slides in and tackles Dries Mertens and gets a yellow card. So I guess maybe I'll track back a little bit and talk about that. Is that a red card?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think so it's too. Hard for us to say because we're a little biased, but it sure seemed like Napoli fans were not the only ones saying that that was a red card.
No, yeah. I think, you know, I guess the initial defense is that he got the ball, but when you
not a follow, defense.
Yeah. When you follow through with your studs up into someone's leg, especially when the position that he's in where Mertens could potentially be scooting past him to go clean in on the goalkeeper, I think that's a red card. I'm sorry. I don't think I think that he got off very, very, very easily with the yellow card. I think the only reason he didn't get a red is because it was in the first 10 minutes of the match. I think if that happens in the 55th minute, it's a red card. That's this
point. And my issue is that the justification for it not being a red, or at least from the commentator's point of view, because he was saying that, you know, he got the ball first. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You also almost broke the guy's leg in two. You can't follow through like that. And in all honesty, if the roles were reversed, I would have loved to have seen Liverpool fans' reactions, you know. And Kirsten's right. We are biased and we don't hide that. But at the same time, I like to think that we can be critical of this team and watch the game from a constructive lens, and that wasn't the case. I mean, that was a red card. I don't care what anybody says. That it was. You saw the picture. You saw the video. It was a nasty tackle. And yeah, he is one of the best center backs in the world. You know, people often say he's number one, and I will still argue that Koulibaly is number one, and I'm proud to say that. But to me, yeah, that's definitely a red card, and that's a game changer right there. And you know what? Mertens didn't look the same when he came back on for the rest of the match. So to say that that didn't affect the game would be wrong as well.
Yeah, I
wondered if it what contributed to Mertens being the first off the pitch.
Yep. You know, I think it's one of those situations where I feel like everyone says that just because, you know, he gets a pass because he's been so highly regarded and it's such a, so early on in the game. But I really think that you can't say after the game, like after the game, he said something so ridiculous too. Like the pitch was slippery and there was nothing I could have done.
That's and BS.
Agreed, Rafa. It's total BS.
The pitch was slippery because I do remember mentioning, you know, noticing a bunch of Napoli guys slipping and sliding all over the place, but that's not a good enough excuse for a challenge like that. Go back and watch the challenge. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, you can see everybody I'm sure who's listening has seen it and has their own opinions on it. But for me, it's a red card, and, you know, Liverpool get a break super early on in the match. And then going back to Salah's goal, you know, It's one of these goals that's a comedy of errors, right? Mario Rui memes himself, and Salah scoots past Koulibaly because Koulibaly's trying to recover from Mario Rui making himself a meme. And then, you know, Ospina probably leaves himself a little to be desired there, even though I think Ospina played very well the rest of the match and probably ended up nullifying that bad decision by keeping us in it. So, you know, I'll throw it up to anybody who wants to chime in on the Liverpool goal. But I mean, I think, you know, we've talked about Mario Rui on this podcast, and everybody, you know, sort of has this idea that he's not really good enough to play, you know, in the Champions League for Napoli. But I'll toss it up to anybody who wants to chime in at this point.
Goal was bound to happen.
I think it was. Yeah, the goal was bound to happen. Absolutely. I just personally, I was so frustrated at all of those people who were already, you know, the whole Koulibaly not being the best, one of the best in the world, blah, blah, blah. And then it was like everyone seized on that moment as, oh, yeah, he's not that great.
Yeah.
No, he's having to cover for that little jackass who hopefully will not be seen very often soon. And I just
no,
so frustrated.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm done now.
It's No, but she's 100% right. Kirsten's 100% right, and it's true because we saw, what was it, last game out or two games ago when
pushing him into,
Koulibaly's literally pushing Rui to cover his man? You know, like, it's frustrating, and everyone's like, oh, see, he's not that good. But he had Salah in his pocket for a lot of that game. So I don't criticize Koulibaly. My criticism is, one, and I tweeted this up, that I really wanted Gulam playing, and I know he'd only come back one game before, but if he could come off the bench and he could start 90 minutes on Saturday, he could have played at least 60 minutes on Tuesday. And I think that would have made a difference, and we saw the instant impact he made when he came off the bench. And two, I mean, Carlo went with that back three, back four, you know, makeshift that you switch when you're attacking in defense, and try to do that again against Klopp, and it didn't work this time, and it was naive to go with it again. And Rui's just a defensive liability in a game like this where you have to hold the fort, and, you know, even going forward, he offered very, very little, and it's just frustrating to see him on the pitch. And you know what? If he wasn't on the pitch, I think we would have seen something different. We would have seen a different outcome. I really do believe that, because the confidence that Gulam gives this team when he comes on the field cannot be overstated, because he does. He makes such a big difference, and it's so frustrating to see Rui still starting games, especially big games at Anfield.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we've spoken so highly of Ancelotti so far this season. And I think that that's well deserved. I think that nobody would have expected us to be where we are in the league at this point, given the changeover in manager and everything else, and the way that he's approached the team and the way that everybody's been able to play and all of those sort of nice things that come along with what we've gotten so far in the first 5 months under Carlo Ancelotti. But I think that he kind of got stuck tactically in this match. I think he came out to be a little conservative, and also just be a little, you know, sort of endure the attack a little bit, but we never sort of broke out of it. And I thought the way we played in the first half was poor enough that it warranted changes at halftime. And he didn't make changes at halftime. For me, watching the game, I thought Rui was awful. He should have brought in Gulam at halftime. I thought Hamsik should have been subbed off at halftime. Those two players alone were poor enough that they should have tried to bring someone else on to be a little bit of a spark. I thought he just waited too long to make the changes too. We were in the 60th-ish minute by the time we make a change. And that's just too long in a game like that. I know the game is tight, but Napoli had no reason not to go balls to the wall in the second half. They could have conceded again, and still, if they had scored, they would have gone through. So there's no reason why they shouldn't have been super aggressive. Get your attacking players on. You know, I thought this game would have been perfect for a one-on-one player like Adam Unas to come on and maybe make someone miss and open up the game a little bit. And then, you know, we get to the end of the game and we have two massive chances that go missing. First is, you know, Napoli get a chance and Cajon has a big chance to tie the game up, and he gets it all wrong and puts it out of play, and that's the first one. So, I mean, I don't know if anybody has anything to say about those chances, about Cajon's chance, but given the big chance that we had later in the game, right at the end of the game with Milik, I thought that Cajon's miss was way worse.
You mentioned, making the changes, and I really was lobbying for a Cajon substitution because I don't really think he offered very much in the game against Liverpool. You know, a lot of people out there, there are a few people that, you know, will talk a lot of garbage about Cajon because of, you know, he can't score this and that. And granted, he's, you know, not scored this year yet, really. I can't really tell if his form has dipped a bit this season, but definitely in that game he didn't provide the spark that I think we needed, that Unas could have provided for us. I really thought that Unas should have come in for Cajon, and that miss would never even have, like, I mean. I mean, I don't know what kind of opportunities we would have had, but, Cajon missing that opportunity was nothing new this season. You know, it just, you just kind of throw your hands up, you know, and I was more excited for the Milik chance.
Yep. Yep. Kirsten.
I don't think that Callejon has necessarily had a drop in form this season. I think we've seen him perform excellent. He's not the goal scorer. And I think in this situation, the entire squad was extremely frustrated. I'm not entirely certain that they weren't disagreeing with their boss on the lack of changes. But whatever it was, they were frustrated, and he toward the front is bearing the brunt of it. And as we know, he hasn't really been the goal scorer this season. So he gets up there and he makes that attempt, and he was never going to, in the frame of mind that he was in, he was never going to make that chance. And of course it, we might have hoped for it, but it wasn't, I guess, the right mindset. And okay, so maybe he should have been pulled because of that. But then again, how many of those players should have been pulled? We only have three subs. Is he really the one you're going to pull off? Maybe he would be the third.
Yeah.
But to me, he was not the problem.
Marco.
My thing is this. Overall, was very frustrating. And Kenya mentioned it, that we had nothing to lose when it was 1-0. I was actually almost relieved when Liverpool scored because I figured, you know what? It's going to force Napoli to go forward.
It would open it up.
Because, yeah, like I said, if Liverpool scores one, who cares, right? And at least this way, they scored early enough that we have a chance to respond. And that's what made me angry, is that until Goulam came in what, the 70th minute, we didn't even see this team try to press. And that's what infuriated me more than anything. And that's where I'm going to blame Ancelotti, because I've got a lot of love for him as a coach, and I'm not going to rip on him too much, because he's done a wonderful job transitioning from Sarri, which I didn't think was possible, and he's done it a lot quicker than most anticipated. But he was brought in for big games like Tuesdays at Anfield, and we didn't see that. And again, I'm going to criticize the system he went with, because it was the exact same thing that made him, and it was the exact same system we praised him for after the first game at the São Paulo, because it worked geniusly. But it was naive of him to think that Klopp wouldn't respond and have an answer for that in this game, and that was the case. And the players are to blame as well, because they looked scared and they looked nervous, even though they said they wouldn't be, they did. But with that said, you know, it took literally 70 minutes and being a goal down for them to finally press. And it's like, all you need here is a goal and you're through. Never mind if Liverpool responds, who cares? And that's why I actually had an argument with another podcast, pretty big one. I'm not going to give them the credit and the time, because they were basically suggesting that Liverpool showed their dominance, and so did Tottenham. And I'm not going to talk about Tottenham Inter, but to say Liverpool showed their dominance over 180 minutes is absolutely absurd. Yeah. Because because Napoli dominated Liverpool just as much as Liverpool dominated Napoli. And yeah, Liverpool had a lot of chances at Anfield, but that's also because the last 20-25 minutes, Napoli had nothing to lose by playing going forward. So they had to be a little bit more attack-minded. It's just frustrating. It took so long for them to get to that point, because it really did feel like they were going to go in there trying to play for a 0-0 draw, which was the worst possible thing that you could have done.
Yeah. Nope.
They didn't need to. I mean, if they'd gone in straight up and just tried to score goals, who cares? They score a goal, Liverpool score two, Napoli still go through. Like, that was what I didn't understand.
That really was a frustrating part for me, is that I kind of felt the same to Marco after Liverpool scored. I was like, okay, now we can open him up a little bit. You know, I thought maybe Napoli played conservative and thought maybe if they got to halftime 0-0, they would be able to just sort of ride the wave a little bit, but yeah, after Liverpool scored, I was like, okay, they scored. Now we can just be ourselves and be aggressive and express ourselves in the second half. And, you know, Ancelotti has generally done very well, especially in the second half, to come out and make the changes he needed. And, you know, Ancelotti doesn't get all the blame for me either. A lot of the players didn't perform. I thought, you know, we had a lot of people who played under their level. I thought, you know, Alan wasn't at his normal level. Hamsik, I love you, but dude, this was the game for me where I was just like, he just doesn't look like he's ready to play on a European stage anymore. Like at this level, you know, I feel. Yeah, I think it wasn't good enough. He wasn't good enough. The whole left side of the field really wasn't very, very good. I thought Fabian didn't play up to his level that he had been showing the past couple weeks. Mario Rui was a disaster. You know, Insigne and Mertens too. I know they didn't get much service, and I think Mertens was probably hurting after that challenge. But you know, I thought maybe the changes came too late. And then we, you know, we have the huge chance at the end of the game. We have a cross come in, it deflects off of a Liverpool player. Milik really, with a bit of luck, is able to stumble and get his left foot down to control the ball. Gets it onto his weaker right foot, and you know, as Alisson is coming out and a defender is bearing in on him from behind, he hits it as hard as he can. And, you know, Alisson, all credit to him, is in the exact place he should be, coming out, making himself big, and makes a great save. I know people said it wasn't that – some people said it wasn't that great of a save and that Milik shut the ball right into him. But given the amount of time that Milik had, which was almost none, and given the fact that he's on his weaker foot, he hits it clean as a whistle, and Alisson, you know, makes himself big and makes a great save. And you know, if that ball is hit, you know, maybe 3 or 4 inches to the left, you know, we are singing a completely different story in this podcast. We are talking about how we held 1-1, and we're talking about who we're playing next in the Champions League after finishing second in our group. So,
I was just going to say that's a sign of a good goalkeeper is to make it look like yes, it wasn't that
I was
going to
say the same thing. After looking at it again, it doesn't look like he did much, but he really did by standing his ground. You know, like you said too, Kenny, making himself big. You know, he could have you know, guessed to pick the side and went for a side. You know, but he stood his ground and you know, it's a fantastic save no matter if he dove for it or did any, he just stood there. You know, he did his job, and that's why he gets paid the big bucks. You know, that's why Liverpool paid Roma 70 million.
Yeah, and what else is a subtle thing in it? And after I watched the replay, I don't know whether I just hate myself and I just watch this replay a million times just to make myself feel worse. But I watched it a bunch last night and this morning just to sort of get an extra look at it. And what Alisson does is actually feigns to his left, Milik's right, and it makes it seem like he's going to dive to the left, and Milik instinctually just shoots slightly to Alisson's right, and Alisson is there, going back to his right, right before he hits the ball. It's great goalkeeping, and it shouldn't have come down to a last-second, last gasp to, you know, try to get us a result to send us through. You know, we can talk about all the shoulda, woulda, couldas with, you know, not getting a result in Belgrade, or Di Maria's, you know, last minute, you know, tie to,
I don't want to hear all that because
I need more alcohol for that.
Yeah. The shoulda, coulda, woulda is we should have got a goal in Liverpool. That's just the bottom line. That was the scenario we were presented with, and we should have got a goal. Now we didn't get it. You know, is it Ancelotti's fault? Is it a certain player's fault? Is it a certain group of players' fault? We can talk about it till we're blue in the face. The real life scenario is that we're still in Europe. We're in the Europa League, and you know, Ancelotti might have got it wrong. He might have made his subs a little too late. But look at it this way too. You know, we've said it a million times since Tuesday. And you know, I went live for a half hour or more on our Twitter page. What we did in this group stage, Saudi would never have done in this type of environment. You know, and those substitutions that Ancelotti did make, you know, besides the Fabian one, he didn't play well, but I don't think he should have come off. I think Hamsik definitely should have come off for Zielinski. And but those substitutions wouldn't have been made until like even Marco, you said it just a couple minutes ago. By the 70th minute, we woke up with at the 70th minute was when we made our third substitution, and with Saudi it would have been the 85th minute. You know, so those substitutions were definitely, even though he should have made a couple changes at the half or maybe a little earlier, 55th minute maybe, he started making them at the 60th, and all three subs were in by the 70th minute. With Saudi, we wouldn't have had three substitutions in there until the last 3 minutes. He would have threw Milik in there. So, you know, there's a lot of things you can say about Ancelotti. There's a lot of things you can say about this team. But, you know, if this was a two-legged affair in a knockout stage, it would be probably the most exciting two-legged affair in the whole Champions League, and we'd be going to extra time. So I don't want to hear people say Liverpool showed their class as well, because we beat the crap out of them in Naples. And, you know, they were only able to get one goal against us in Liverpool. They could have had three or four, thanks to, you know, and that's another thing. People talk about, you know, Ospina and how he doesn't deserve it because of the goal.
Yeah, I thought he
look at how
well.
Many other goals he stopped. He kept us in it. Even if Liverpool had scored one goal off of Ospina, one more goal off of Ospina, one goal for us would have been enough. And we wouldn't be talking about how crappy Ospina is. So I don't know. I
think we can just blame that whole goal on Mario.
No, I think, I mean, Ospina doesn't do well on that, but Mario Ruiz just
terrible.
Leaves his team out. Leaves his team out to deal with his mistake. I mean, that is the living embodiment of, you know, why Koulibaly is pushing the guy to be in the proper position. You know, I just don't think he's fine as a substitute player and as a guy who you're going to rotate in, but to go for a year now as we've been going with him as our number one option at left back, you know, we're playing with house money at this point. I think he's played better than his expected level, and it's
Well, what's funny too is that Koulibaly and Ghulam are like best friends off the pitch, and you can see why. Because if you're Koulibaly on the pitch, you're like, thank God I've got somebody decent beside me again, you know?
Yeah, this is one of those things. I think when the draw came out and we saw our group, I think everybody was really expecting us to not even be. You know, even the most ambitious of Napoli fans were, you know, not expecting it to come down to a last minute or a last match against Liverpool. I think we performed very well overall, and I think, you know, it's frustrating in the aftermath because it did come down to one match and we didn't play as well as we could have. But at the end of the day, I think that, and this is, you know, we sound like a broken record here with Napoli, and I've gone over it on Twitter, you know, our sort of quote-unquote record in the Champions League. And, you know, we're the only team with one loss to be out in the group stage. We're the only team with 9 points or more to be out in the group stage, just like we were the only team with 12 points or more to go out in the group stage. And just like the type of luck we get when we win the group, we get Real Madrid. So it's, you know, this is a little a little bit of a hoodoo that's on us here with the Champions League.
Sorry, Ken, but also, you know, this isn't Champions League, but in Serie A, the first team ever to surpass 90 points and not win a Scudetto. But with that said, though, and this has to be addressed because, you know, Napoli fans tend to feel sorry for themselves, and there was a lot of that after Tuesday's game. But at the same time, questions have to be asked about the mentality, because it seems like this team does so much to put themselves in a golden situation, and then right when they're on the verge of making it happen and everybody believe, they drop the ball. You know, you look at last season, right? You go into Torino and you beat Juventus, you do the impossible, and then you lay an egg against Fiorentina. Right, this year you set yourself up. You're in first place going into the last group game, and yeah, it's a difficult game at Anfield. But all you need is a goal, really, and you drop the ball there. So it's frustrating. And yeah, we've had some tough luck, and we draw Real Madrid when we win the group, or whatever the case is. But we also don't help ourselves. And my question becomes, when's that going to change?
Yep.
And, you know, you hope that would be addressed with Ancelotti. And you know what? It's still only been a few months, and he still does bring a common presence. And we'll see what happens going forward in the Europa League or whatever the case may be. But at the same time, that's the frustrating part, is that this team gets so close and they make you believe. And right when they're on the edge of something special or on the verge of doing something special, that's when they tend to choke. And that's the most frustrating part of everything.
I agree. And I've had some chats with some friends about this, and you know, what is the deal, and you know, what can we do, or what do we do when it comes to this mentality thing? And Marco, I think you put it perfectly. Every time, you know, every time we're about to burst that bubble and finally go over the hump of this mentality thing, you know, we just sort of drop it, and then we go down another couple rungs in the ladder. You know, it's I think that's the most frustrating part, and I don't know whether it's, you know, the setup in the team and some of these guys that have been around a while, and it's just not, you know, they just don't have the right mindset. And, you know, I'm not pointing fingers, and I'm not going to say, you know, this is the reason why, but, you know, you look at some of the guys who you would think would be leaders on this team, and, you know, are they, and, you know, are they vocal and are they rallying their guys? And, you know, those questions do have to be asked, and you just hope that, and this sort of transitions to us being in the Europa League, where I think in the past, and everybody knows who listened to the podcast when we were Sempre, I was not a fan of Europa League at all. At all, not even a little bit. I said, screw this competition. Doesn't mean anything. It's junk. It's a consolation tournament. But after seeing us go out and struggle with our confidence on a European stage, I think we have to go after this competition this year. You know, we're in the Europa League. There's nothing we can do about it now. This is where we're at. And we have to go into this competition believing and thinking and playing like we can win it. I think
I even think that winning it last year would have boosted our confidence. And, you know, we talked about this on our chat, you know, even nobody's really a fan of the Europa League. Who's really a fan of it? You know, you want to play in the Champions League. That's what you want. We lost a lot of money, you know, crashing out of the Champions League. We lost a lot of money. And that's, you know, nobody really cares about the Europa League, but to win the Europa League would have given us confidence. And, you know, we all said it. Look what it did for Atletico. Look what it did for was Sevilla.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, Atletico was one of the, you know, prominent teams in Europe now. And they've won, like, what, 3 Europa League?
Yeah.
That I can remember.
Yeah. Including last year.
It's just, you know, and everybody who listens to the podcast knows that I'm always a proponent of going after it, because year after year in that Europa League, we become, you know, one of the better teams in that competition. And this year we could legitimately call ourselves one of the best teams, you know, in that competition.
Agreed.
There's no reason we shouldn't win this. Like, for me, there's no other expectation is to at least, you know, get to the final and win it.
I mean, the scenario is this, right? The league, we're 8 points off the pace in the league. Not an insurmountable number by any means. Things happen.
No, but apparently very disappointing, according to Payman Dadgar.
But if you guys saw that. I think it is insurmountable. That's just me. And it's not because
it's insurmountable with Juventus in the league.
Yeah, I mean, they've dropped 2 points. I don't want to sound pessimistic and, you know, like I'm already giving up. But this, whether you like to admit it or not, this Juve side is doing something ridiculous right now. And 8 points, it to me, it does seem insurmountable. And you know what, though? But you're in a comfortable situation sitting in second, 6 points ahead of Inter, even more ahead of a Champions League spot. So you have no excuse not to go for this, because at the end of the day, right now, what else are you really playing for? Coppa Italia game comes up in January, great, whatever, who cares? But at the end of the day, this is your best chance to win a trophy, at least of any relevance or significance. So why not go out there and try to do it? I agree with
Ray. Yeah, I think it's one of those things, right? We're 8 points off the pace in the league. We're comfortably, we're 10 points into the Champions League zone, if you will. We're 10 points ahead of being out of the Champions League zone, which is also a nice cushion. So, you know, we have some wiggle room in the league, and we have to go after the cup competitions this year. Ancelotti is a manager who is going to take the Europa League seriously. I'll guarantee you that. He will not, we're not going to see, you know, youth players. We're not going to see, you know, a full second team every match. It's just not the way it's going to be. You know, and I think we will have a little bit of a wait and see where we are in January when the fixture comes up. But I don't see any reason why we wouldn't take this competition super seriously this year. And with that being said, after today's Europa League fixtures, the pots are all set up, and these are our possible draws for the round of 32. So, possible Napoli opponents. In this group, I don't see one opponent that we shouldn't beat. I'll say that right now. So Club Bruges from Belgium, Fenerbahce, Galatasaray, Sporting from Portugal, Shakhtar Donetsk, Victoria Pilsen, Rapid Vienna, Malmo, Krasnodar from Russia, Rennes from France, Bate Borisov, FC Zurich, Celtic, Slavia Prague, and Olympiakos. Those are the teams that are left that we could draw. So
Rangers didn't make it.
No, they're green and white brethren from across the city made it. I think of those teams, there are only a couple that even you know, minorly would, I mean, I would like to not have to take a trip to Ukraine or Russia if I have to choose.
That always seems to be a problem for us. Yes. So, yeah. Yes. I yes. that.
Huge problem for us, actually. We do not like to play in the Europa League or in the Champions League in Ukraine. That's for sure. I mean, I think, you know, the way it sets up, a nice trip to, like, you know, Switzerland, a short trip to Switzerland would be nice.
Or Olympiacos.
I like Malmo because Malmo has really cheap flights from Belgrade, so I can get there easily.
I mean, I think maybe, you know, if you're really picking up, like, to not play either of the Turkish teams either, just because of the atmosphere. You know, Galatasaray, I think, is notorious for having a ridiculous
both
atmosphere.
Of them are.
Yeah, so, you know, a nice rapid Vienna, Malmo. You know, that would be nice. But I think, you know, like I said, I think there's any reason why we shouldn't be advancing from this stage. I'll throw it up to anybody who wants to chime in. But I think that we should be looking at least to easily be getting into the round of 16.
I wouldn't mind avoiding Olympiacos after what happened.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say the same thing, Kirsten. I watched that Milan game today, and that atmosphere is pretty.
Yeah, they can be really intimidating as well, definitely.
Yeah, like as far as a travel goes, it's not far. It's Greece. It's, you know, we're Southern Italy. It's not far, but yeah, that and they're a nice little team too. Honestly, I think that would be tough, but still doable. But
yeah, you know, I think I mean, you know, I think being in Pot A, we definitely, you know, we avoid some of the, you know, quote unquote heavy hitters that are still in the competition. You know, all the German teams are in that sort of first tier. All of the Spanish teams are in that pot. The British teams are all in that pot as well. And we obviously can't draw any teams from Italy in this round. So, you know, we won't be going to Lazio or Milan in the first round. So, I mean, that's where we sit. I think this is a competition.
Where is Zurigo?
Oh, it's Zurich, FC Zurich. Okay. It's Italian untranslated. I was like, I don't know what that is. Okay. Yeah. FC Zurich.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. Zurigo is a magical place where you automatically win 5-0. I think.
Don't say that.
I mean, that being said, there are some. There are obviously some very good sides still in the competition, and you know we have to just, you know, I think that the further we go in this competition, the more the stars align for us to play Chelsea. I just have a gut feeling that's going to happen. We're going to be sitting here in February or March talking about playing Saudi. I just think that the soccer gods are cruel to us, and they will undoubtedly do that.
The soccer gods hate us.
They
with
do.
A fiery passion.
Really do. So the European stage is set for us for the rest of the season. And that leaves Napoli to go this weekend of the league. And I get a scary sense of the fact that this may be a big old slippery banana peel coming up for us here. We play Cagliari. You know, we traveled to Sardinia. Cagliari has not lost a game at home yet this season. They do have 5 draws and 7 matches at home, but they have not lost. And I think that this has a potential to be a very important game for us to recover and just sort of give the fans a little bit of a nod that everything is okay, because I think that we have the potential to go into this game with feeling, like Marco said earlier in the podcast, feeling sorry for ourselves and underestimating an opponent that's very good at home and walking away and dropping points. We haven't lost to Cagliari in our last 14 matches against them, but we do have a couple of draws. So thoughts on how we should we do you think there's going to be major rotation this weekend? You think we're going to see a lot of different names this week, or are we going to get a lot of the same faces?
I think the problem is it's like you don't even know what rotation is anymore, right? Again, like we can revert back to last week in the lineup that we saw on Tuesday, but I think Milik probably will get the start, especially given the way Mertens left the game and he didn't look the same. And I'd have no issues with Milik, you know, getting the start, especially the way he's looked the last couple of games in the league anyways. And I think Gulam will probably get a start. I think they need a result here, and I think they get a win. I think they need to, just for their spirits, to keep them up and keep them in a good situation, because they do have Inter coming up on Boxing Day not too far away. So it is important to continue to get points and continue to do well in the league. So honestly, I would like to see Diawara get a start as well, see him getting some more time, even Rogue starting to get some more time. But I think it is important that you get 3 points. So we'll see. And even Verdi returned.
Yeah, I'd like to see Verdi start as well.
Potentially, I don't, and that's the thing. We'll see what his status is. I don't know if he'll be able to start. Hopefully he will. If he doesn't start, at least make an appearance, a cameo off the bench. And even Yunus, because, you know, we didn't see much of Yunus. And you know what? I didn't like the guy before he even started with us, just because of what happened and that whole soap opera with him coming and not coming. And he kind of learned about his character a little bit, but he looked pretty good. And the thing is, this team, a lot of people are criticizing the depth of this team, but this team is so deep, especially with Ghulam coming back. I mean, yeah, they still need a legit number nine, and I really believe that. But with that said, this team is really, really deep, and I think there's a lot of potential, and I think Carlo's really looking at the long-term project.
Yeah, Kirsten's got our virtual hand up, so Kirsten, go.
I just wanted to make sure that we all know that we're talking about the team that managed to get 2 straight reds and then go on and take points from Roma last weekend.
Sure do,
right, same team. So they're missing Cerna, which seems significant, and they're also missing the central defender, whose name I won't say because all the Italians will laugh.
Cepitelli, yes.
Yes. It's not my fault. When I listen in Serbia, I don't get the right pronunciation. So anyway, that seems like it would be significant. But then again, I also don't want to jinx us into thinking that them not having those two there to start is going to make it a little easier on us.
Yeah, I mean, I think going back to some of the things that Marco said, you know, I think that Yunus played well enough in his cameo last week to deserve a start. I also think that we need to get Ghulam into that heavy rotation. You know, we're going to have a nice long stretch here, you know, before the wacky Christmas schedule in a couple of weeks. We're going to have a little bit of a stretch here where we can get guys a couple of games in without having to rotate with midweek fixtures. So I think it's time to get Ghulam's legs officially under him. I think Verdi, if he's back and ready, he should play. You know, and Marco, like you said, I think attacking the team's depth is the wrong move, because this is as deep of a team as we've ever seen for Napoli anyway. I mean, if you look at the options from the wings and attacking options, and even in defense now with, you know, with giving players like Maximovic and Luperto, and, you know, every single player that is fit for this team has played and started games. And that's a huge deal. I would like to see, I think you're going to see Hisai this weekend. I would love to see Malqui this weekend, but I don't think you're both going to play if Ghulam is playing. I think that it's time to try somebody else out in that center midfield spot where Hamsik has been playing. And I, you know, I think, and as much as I've sort of been digging in on him the last bit, I think Diawara should get a start this weekend and play with Alan if Alan is going to play, because I think we need to give that guy another chance and see what he's made of, because I think we need to start thinking about who's going to be in that position in life after Marek Hamsik, or if Verdi coming back means that it's going to be that player is going to be Fabian or Piotr Zielinski. There's a lot of questions, and there's a lot of depth, and there's a lot of, you know, flexibility, and I think that it's going to be interesting to see. I think, I mean, in my brain, we go out and we absolutely just wipe the floor with them and we win huge. But I'm too smart to think that that's actually going to happen with this team.
We could see a 3-3 from 9 years ago. Or like a 1-0 last minute from 8 years ago, Lavezzi breakaway. That was pretty cool.
I still remember that.
I went out and bought that jersey because of that play. That was insane. And that was 8 years ago when it fit me, so that was...
I bought that man's jersey for very different reasons, but
we probably did. We just moved it, and I was going through I have a whole bin of old jerseys that we have in the basement that I was going through, and I found a Lavezzi jersey in there that is all, you know, it's one of these, you know, bought online, like, 8 years ago when the quality was absolute garbage and all the numbers and letters are all, you know, messed up from going in the washer like 2 times. But yeah, I mean, you know, just being nostalgic for a minute. Yeah. Talking about Lavezzi just made me think about the fact that I unearthed a jersey of his that definitely doesn't fit me anymore either. So I'm with you, Rafa.
Mm-hmm. I found that exact jersey, the white one, the one that he scored that goal on. That was amazing. And you remember the previous year, the 3-3 I was talking about, that was when he got sent off and then was seen celebrating from the tunnel because he was walking off the field and then we scored the goal to make it 3-3. And that was awesome time. But yeah, there's no reason we shouldn't win this game, but how are we after, you know, after an elimination game? Like I think it was a draw to Fiorentina last year.
Yeah, after we lost.
After
Feyenoord
knocked out of the champ. So you know, let's see how we bounce again. Different manager, different mentality, different team. You know, but I think that this is the right time for these players to be coming back from injury and getting more playing time.
I wish it was maybe 2 weeks earlier, but
or a different circumstance that we're like waiting for the you know round of 16 instead of round of 32 Europa League. But you know, this stretch of no Europe until February is going to pay dividends, you know, for the team getting back together at full strength, you know.
I agree. So we have a couple of Ask FFV questions here from Twitter. I'd like to just get to those.
Please tell me that Payman is one of them because I'm ready for him.
Payman is not one of them. I'm sorry.
Well, Rafa. I got something for him still. So let's do Ask FFV.
Wow, Rafa.
Let's do Ask FFV.
We'll go first. Alan Ramon 8 on Twitter asks, when will we finally start to perform in the Europa League after Ancelotti, K2, and Hamsik told us we will? Do you think it will happen? What is the biggest problem in the team right now? And what player should we bring in to solve it if there is a problem? Well, we talked about the Europa League and what we thought about that. I don't think we have to go back and hit that. But what is the biggest problem in the team right now? And what player should we bring to solve it?
I think
or Marco, go ahead. Yeah.
No, sorry. I think do we all agree that Cavani would be the guy that we would bring in to resolve it? Because I think a legit number 9 that Carlo could really use up top is my answer for that.
Is the dream.
The perfect scenario would have been us and Liverpool through, Red Star in Europa, PSV out, PSG out, so that we can get Cavani because he's clearly unhappy there. And, you know, he could have come in because I believe there's no more cup tie rule. He could have come in and play.
Yeah. I mean, I think that for me, Napoli do need a striker. And I think that we'll get to it. There's a later question here that we'll address, and I'll say why I think we need a striker. But I think that we need a central midfielder as well. I think with Ancelotti, we sort of have one guy in Diawara who is more of like a regista and plays deeper, sits deeper than even we're playing. And, you know, Fabian and Zielinski, until that we have, you know, final word on where they're going to be playing, whether their home is going to be out on that left or whether they're going to be used a little bit further up the pitch. I think center midfield is really sort of glaring at me as a place that Ancelotti needs to find someone who can play box to box and let Alan just be, you know, what Alan is and have someone to support him a little bit and carrying the ball a little bit more. But I guess that would be the player for me. Kirsten?
I don't like to talk about the central midfield where I think that we do need someone, but I'm not ready to face it yet.
Oh, poor Hamsik. Elvisuvio 99 asks, what's the story with Verdi? Can we expect to see him again? Yes. I think we just talked about it. He was cleared to practice this week or yesterday, today maybe. And they're saying he might start this week against – or might play against this week against Cagliari. So I think that answers that. Georges asks us, how do we deal with high press at Liverpool and the black and white team applied against us? Long ball out to small forwards is not working. I think, you know, having a true number 9 like Marco talked about earlier and, you know, in our dream scenario with Cavani is one way. If we're going to continue to play the long ball out. We need a more of a target man type of guy. But I also think a little bit of tactical variation might help us and someone else to be a little bit closer to the defense. But I'll throw it up to anybody else who wants to get tactical on us and throw in some thoughts on how to beat the high press.
Well, the long balls out to the side would also be better if the players out to the side were a little stronger quality.
I was going
to
say the same thing. Bringing in, you know, Ghulam back and possibly maybe a Ghulam Makui, you know, right back, left back, I think would be the perfect scenario for a guy like Milik or a guy like if we were to bring Cavani in, you know, or any number nine. You know, I say Cavani because
we all want to see him. We all want to see him back.
Of course.
I do think that if that does happen, it would be in the summer, but that's just me.
So do I. I don't think we're going to see any big moves made in January.
No, especially now. I thought maybe, you know, if we get through into the knockout stages of the Champions League and you have a little bit of that extra money, you maybe go after someone who you think could help you advance far in the Champions League. But I think the way you look at our team now for January where we sit in the league, I don't think there's a necessary need to invest huge in January. If we're going to stay the same way we're playing now, we have enough options up front. Maybe you bring in another striker, but I don't know who that person is. It's just another Band-Aid. January moves are Band-Aid moves. So aside from, you know, a couple in our history, in most recent history, they've just been moves to sort of slap a Band-Aid on a problem and hope they work out.
I could see Tonali from Brescia coming in.
Yeah, those are smart January moves, right? A guy who's probably not going to feature and a guy who needs to meld into Serie A a little bit, that's the perfect type of January move. It's like when we brought Jorginho and Ghulam and even, you know, those are guys who were much younger when they came in and they were able to sort of get into it a little bit before you have to ask them to do anything proper. I think that, you know, you don't usually see big January transfers.
You see Milic.
That's, I forgot about that guy. Jeez, Rafa. Wow. Yeah, last year, Milic.
Remember that?
Yeah, Milic and Milic.
Do you remember that? Me neither.
Yeah.
Geez. Next question.
Last question. I feel like I always save our buddy Frank sidekick for last.
My man.
Frank says, howdy. 442, long-term future or smart temporary measure for a team in a style transition? For me, I think this is temporary.
Agreed.
I think that Insigne Mertens as a striker combination is not something you do, you know, for a long term. I think that Ancelotti, you know, is a type of manager and always has been that loves a true number nine. And, you know, the problem with Milik is that Milik he's the size of a classic number nine, but he doesn't have a physical skill set of a classic number nine. He's not a hold up play type of guy. He wants to play a little bit more. And I just think that, you know, it's still, even though he had a brace, and I mean, I think that everyone is a little bit too hard on him, but I don't think that he's necessarily the striker that Ancelotti wants right now to be his number one striker. I think that eventually we see this team change into a 4-2-3-1. I know it gives people Rafa Benitez flashbacks and everyone gets super scared when I bring it up, but I think that when you have a player like Insigne who's played his whole career on the wing and he's played up until the last couple of weeks very well as sort of a second striker, I think 4-2-3-1 is the way we line up in the future. That's just my two cents about it. I think that Frank had a hunch that we would say that 4-4-2 wasn't the long-term solution, but so he's kind of given us a little bit of bait there, and I think that he agrees, but that's pretty much where I stand on that. Anybody else have any thoughts on 4-4-2 moving forward, whether it's just a Band-Aid or a long-term solution?
I agree. I don't think it is a long-term solution. I think they're in a transition stage right now, and Ancelotti's still trying to utilize the strengths of the squad from the Sarri era, but I think in the long term, you know what, a 4-2-3-1 could work, and I think we'll know more about the long term future of this team probably next season, you know, after another training camp and once he's had a full year with the squad. But in the meantime, a 4-4-2 seems to work well with this club, and we'll see what happens down the line. But I agree, I don't think it's going to be a long term solution.
Rafa or Kirsten?
No, I mean, I'm happy with what works, man. Like, the 4-4-2 is working. You know, Ancelotti is known for being able to change, you know, with interchangeable formations and tactics in and out of matches. So, you know, whatever works, man. And you know, I'm fine with 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1, 4-1-3-2, 4-4-4.
4-4-4, classic Napoli 4-4-4.
The classic. You know, it doesn't matter to me. What about the one that, who's the coach? Thiago Motta is playing with one of the youth teams, the PSG youth team. He's playing
2-7-2.
2-7-2, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's try that.
I read about that. That's kind of...
Isn't that just becoming like the WMMW nonsense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just sitting here thinking, I'm not going to talk about formations because I'm finally embraced the fact that I don't care about tactics, and then I throw that in there. So I'm going to go back to being quiet.
Yeah, I don't think 2-7-2 is going to be our final formation.
No.
I think that sounds crazy to me.
Come on, with the goalkeeper as one of the seven?
Oh, man. Well, we're going to tidy up the end of this episode here, I think, now. We've gone through... You know, we've had to just rehash a pretty crappy couple days here. And I think we've done a pretty good job of keeping ourselves composed. I think maybe I was expecting us to be a little bit harsher on everybody. But I think everybody here having 2 days to sort of think about it and hone ourselves in did us a good job. But, you know, as always, you can find us on Twitter at Far From Vesuvius. That's the best way to get in touch with us right now. Farfromvesuvius.wordpress.com is going to be back up and rolling again pretty soon with regular content. I'm also going to start pushing all the podcasts there so you can listen on the website. I will drop all of our Twitter handles into the show notes so you guys can follow us, and always feel free to reach out to any of us directly if you have any Napoli chat you want to get involved with us. And as always, you know, if you're listening on iTunes, we just got, you know, recently got back up on iTunes. Hit that 5-star, hit a subscribe, leave us a comment, leave us a review. If you're on Podbean, leave us a review, follow us. You know, we're trying to get ourselves back up and rolling here, and any support we can get from all the listeners out there would be a huge help for us. So, as always, Forza Napoli.